Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to the show. And this is the in-between-isode in Matt Maruca Week, a questions and answers session. Matt is currently in the process of educating himself on topics in politics, philosophy, but also things like communication and personal development. And he had a few questions he wanted to bring up with me. I really wish this part of the conversation could have been 2 hours long instead of closer to 30 minutes long. But we were running out of time. It was Easter. He wanted to have a dinner with his family. But I was very happy we were able to slip this in at the end. And I think we'll probably have more conversations like this in the future. By the way, thanks for all the positive feedback that's been sent my way on the first episode. I hope everyone's enthusiasm continues throughout the week. We'll continue Matt's story on Friday. The last thing I did before leaving the Philly area was I get to see like a quick tour of his business operation. You're going to hear a lot more about that and the ideas behind that in Friday's episode. So just a couple of quick things before we get started. The next occurrence of Renegade University and School Sucks Project presented Weekend with Thaddeus Russell has been announced. It's happening May 11th through the 13th in New Orleans, Louisiana. We're going to do two topics. The title for Saturday's presentation, Race. Have you heard about this? The history of an idea. And on Sunday, we are going to be digging even further than we have in past events, into Thad's new book, Blood and Freedom. You'll hear me mention that to Matt in the conversation you are about to hear. The stories in this book are mind-blowing. I remember in Salem, when he was talking about the Nazis, it was like the air got sucked out of the room. It was intense. So I hope you can be there to experience it in person. Raise your hand, ask a question. I'm confident you'll have a terrific time. And also, I think some of the stories that he presents, they actually outdo a lot of what's in A Renegade History of the United States as far as like holy shit value is concerned, especially the stuff around World War II. Wow. But yeah, please come join us May 11th through the 13th, New Orleans, Louisiana. There are a few VIP tickets left, but plenty of general admission seats remain. So what are you waiting for? Actually, I hate that. I'm sorry. Take that back. What are you waiting for? That's what everyone says at the end of every radio ad. And I always say, what am I waiting for? I just heard about this thing 30 seconds ago, you impatient dickhole. Maybe I'll take a day to think about it. And you should too. And you know what? You have a week. You have 2 weeks. I've given you the information. The ball's in your court. I hope to see you there. It's interesting too. I'm going to have to fly to this one. I drove to the first two. The one in Salem because it was just 2 hours away from my house. And the one in LA because it was just, 26 days away from my house. But it was fine. So remember, we'll conclude Matt's story on Friday. And come check in with us next week as well. I've got Pam Laricchia from Living Joyfully with Unschooling. We had a wonderful conversation last week. I'm going to edit that up nice for you, and it should be on the way Monday or Tuesday. And I also just want to preview something that's going to be coming up probably towards the middle or end of next week. I received an email from an elementary school teacher who asked to remain anonymous. And this person told me that they had heard the episode Enough with Thaddeus Russell. This was covering March for Our Lives and the student walkouts back in March. That story is not over, folks. And this teacher told me that he or she, I don't even know that, had written a piece called The Making of a Mindless Movement and wanted to publish it at schoolsucksproject.com. So I will share that with you when it happens. I will also turn it into a podcast for those of you who are unable to take the time to sit down and read because you've got things to do, right? Weather's getting nice out there. You want to wax your car. You want to paint your fence. Anyway, you have your own list. Those are just the things that Mr. Miyagi wanted Daniel to do in The Karate Kid. But everyone has their own unique projects. So long story short, that will be a podcast as well. So that's it. Let's get right to this Q&A. This has been a mind-blowing week for me. First of all, on Sunday, sitting down and having this conversation with Matt, getting to spend all that time with him at his house and in Philadelphia, sightseeing. And even the last couple of days, re-listening to these conversations and trimming them down a little bit for production. I hope you've had a similar experience, and that experience continues throughout the week. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Here we go.
You know, we don't have too much time left, but
you want to put some questions to me?
I'm interested in asking you about a lot of things that.
Well, we could do another session, but if you have like your top two or three, let's go for it.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And if you have questions for me, I'd love to, hear things that you could throw out that you think might be valuable for the listeners. But so again, I'd consider myself still largely a beginner to the whole liberty philosophy. I mean, I get it. I almost intuitively agree with it, if not from my logical examination, which even on that note, I still agree with it from that side. When I learn about this stuff more, I come to wonder, like I kind of mentioned this earlier off the air, but I talk with people and I share these ideas that government isn't good. And, you know, for example, General Smedley Butler's essay, War is a Racket, or part of his book, talking about how U.S. government has not been a force for good in general around the world. It's been a force for Wall Street and a force for money and banks and control.
The guy I do the events with, Thaddeus Russell, he's writing a book right now called Blood and Freedom.
Yeah.
Right. And it's that idea that American politics and like foreign policy advisors and intellectuals and talking heads, you know, like the John Boltons and the neocons and, you know, a lot of people on the left who support the same kind of like, I mean, neoconservatism, like George Bush's foreign policy that brought you Iraq, is basically just like left-wing politics applied to the world. It's like remaking things in our image, which progressives try to do nationally and neocons tried to do internationally. But they kind of hijack the benefits that American culture, like the culture of freedom and capitalism, that has had on other parts of the world that were much less free, as the result, the people's embrace of freedom in places like Eastern Europe, behind the Iron Curtain, in Germany after World War II, in Japan, as the result of military action and not a kind of injection of American culture that follows. Now, you could say that that's certainly not purely capitalist, right? It's really cronyist. And we saw this, like, people didn't get to see what Smedley Butler was talking about, the corporatist side of this. It's the government was working at the behest of corporations, right? Which is certainly not capitalism.
Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of things that could be called besides shitty. But we really got to see what it looked like in Iraq. You know, there's that documentary. I'm sure it was made with like a left-wing slant, but it's called Iraq for Sale.
Yeah.
And it talks about, you know, the country was destroyed and then it was turned over to corporations to rebuild.
Yeah.
You know, so that's definitely cronyism. But when the Coca-Cola and the jeans come, you know, people do get a taste of what life is like here. And they associate, even though these things are like, you know, superficial or materialistic, they associate it with freedom and they want more of it.
Yeah.
So Thaddeus is, you know, telling the story about, you know, the horrors of U.S. foreign policy, similar to Smedley Butler, but also the benefits of the spreading of American culture. But I take your point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that it's much more shaded than it's just the America goes someplace and good stuff happens.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Well,
it's not shaded. It's usually bad stuff happens first. Lots of bad stuff.
Yeah, and so for example, for the friend who, you know, I mentioned wants to be a politician and we'll be talking and he'll say something like, you know, but what are you going to do with all the people who need healthcare now? Okay, maybe this philosophy makes sense for the future, but for now, you know, there's got to be something done and they're trying to take away money from these people. You know, are you just going to take the money and let them suffer? That's kind of one aspect of things.
Okay, so let's deal with that one first. Yeah. Now they're going to, it's not up to you, right? They're going to have whatever healthcare they have until that system collapses on top of them. And, you know, you should say to your friend, like, it sounds like you don't have to do it in like a hostile way. Like, it sounds like you have a lot of compassion for these people. People don't even realize they're doing it. Mm-hmm. But there's a setup, right? It's like, okay, so you and I are talking and we're kind of pretending that it's constructive exchange of dialogue. But I'm creating this dynamic here where I'm compassionate and I care about people and you don't. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So you could say, all right, well, you certainly have a need or a desire to show compassion for all of these people. What are you going to do if this system isn't sustainable? Mm-hmm. You know, now, at least that creates an opportunity for him to pause and think, right? Now, what could you put in that space, right? What could you know about maybe the future of some of these systems?
Yeah.
You know? This country is $20 trillion, or this government is $20 trillion in the red. Mm-hmm. If that was a corporation, what would you trust them to do, right? Whose lives would you trust that corporation with? It doesn't have to be a bunch of pronouncements from you. I mean, this is a mistake that a lot of liberty-minded people make, especially when they're new and very overzealous about these ideas, is it's a lot of you know, righteous indignation and even shame, because there's a moral component, like the non-aggression principle, property rights, self-ownership.
Yeah.
If people don't respect those things, shame on them. You know, that's like a really powerful tool that comes with these ideas. There's a kind of superiority, a feeling of superiority in it,
yeah,
you know, if you're not careful. So to just take a more inquisitive approach, you know, like, well, is this system working now? I mean, I look out there and I see things like all of these kids who are on, you know, this government-assisted healthcare, and, you know, they're getting loaded up on these drugs. I mean, that was my story. That was what took me from the left to libertarianism.
Mm-hmm.
I get to see what kids under the care of the government, I get to see how they were actually treated,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's swallow the spider to catch the fly.
Mm-hmm.
You give him a drug so he can be compliant, and then that drug makes him lethargic, so you give him a stimulant. And that
yeah.
stimulant stops him from sleeping, so you give him a sleeping pill,
mm.
and the sleeping pill makes him, you know, have some other kind of attention problem, so you give him another stimulant.
Yeah.
Until you've got a med box with 35 pills in it.
Yeah.
Per day.
Yeah.
That happens a lot with these kids who are on things like Medicaid, because people aren't really being good stewards for those children,
mm-hmm.
you know? So a big part of the responsibility is yours. To do a little bit of research and, you know, have some facts about this is what happens to kids who are on Medicaid, or this is what happens to kids who are on these government, I forget what the other one is called, the one in Massachusetts that was under fire a couple years ago. Really, really controversial. The kids were being loaded up on drugs. But just say, okay, so here's what's happening now. And the quality of care, like everybody seems to think that the quality of care is going down. And the cost of actual care, like health insurance might be free, but the cost of health care is going through the roof.
Yeah.
And how long can that exist? Yeah. How long can people get care for free as the cost goes up? I mean, the cost of healthcare goes up as fast as, like, I think the only thing that's keeping pace is like higher education.
Yeah.
And there's one more part of that.
Yeah.
People who will argue mostly from that kind of, I mean, conservatives have their own ways of shaming people, you know, about nationalism or U.S. foreign policy or how that stuff saves the world. And they will put, the pushback will be to make you defensive, right? And when you are defensive, maybe not you, but generally speaking, the royal you,
mm-hmm.
when we are defensive, I think, and we're not conscious about that, we're much more likely to be antagonistic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that just maintaining that kind of curiosity and interest in exchanging ideas, and not like, well, I'm, you know, I'm a libertarian, so this is obviously the superior set of beliefs. That's what the person you're arguing with believes about their ideas.
Yeah.
You know? So just keeping it inquisitive. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of a cynical and it's kind of a mean thing to say, but the best way to win an argument, especially with somebody like with somebody on the left, is just to let them talk 95% of the time
mm-hmm.
and just ask them questions.
Yeah.
And eventually their head will explode.
Yeah.
Now, you don't want that to happen to your friend. So just, I would say just a general inquisitive approach is good.
Yeah.
For stuff like that. But it requires you to have some foundation of information as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. It's interesting what you mentioned about healthcare because of the stuff I've learned about health and the way that I view society, and that I see that so many people are really living in a way that is very antagonistic to their mitochondrial health and their overall health, and linking to the whole just epidemic of diseases that are being shown to be mitochondrial, and how that's affecting our healthcare. Spending is just, from my perspective, you know, these environmental factors are the main causes.
Mm-hmm.
There's maybe other factors that I'm not aware of. It's very, very likely or possible, but that healthcare spending is just skyrocketing. It's going through the roof. And like you said earlier when we were chatting off air about, you know, is this sustainable? If nothing else, is it, you know, something for people to consider what next when the, you know, United States government, like all governments, which has not existed forever,
right?
You know, ceases to exist. Wouldn't it at least be responsible to think about that stuff? And same thing with the healthcare
system. That's another framing, though, that they'll do, right? That they're responsible. They're the serious responsible people for supporting the government and the status quo, and you're the irresponsible wacko for talking about the possibility of something else. Every government that ever existed that doesn't exist anymore ended most not under the best circumstances,
mm-hmm.
certainly for the people who are living under them, right?
Yeah.
So if the United States government follows the same pattern of all governments that came before it, and it's starting to look more and more likely that that is going to happen, especially when we look at the future of the dollar, the future of the debt, reframe that as, you know, I'm not accusing you of being irresponsible for believing what most of us believe, but I don't feel like I'm being irresponsible for just wanting to start a conversation about what's next, mm-hmm. you know? Because if nobody has that conversation, what's next is probably going to be pretty ugly and shitty.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I mean, I think a lot of the time in ways that get me really uncertain, like, you know, if things, let's say if shit hits the fan or whatever, if let's say, you know, the healthcare spending just continues to skyrocket and the government deficit just continues to skyrocket, but in the negative direction, and these things just continue unfettered, and, you know, we have a huge generation of people from my belief system with the way that people are living that, you know, autism rates and things like this, mental disabilities are absolutely skyrocketing. So let's just say that doesn't change from the trajectory that it's actually going towards right now. So right. the likely outcome continues, which is that we have a huge portion of the population that can't even work or think. And, you know, let's hope that people don't get super sick and that we have a healthy society and that things go very well and function well and there's no huge issue. But let's say that that doesn't happen, because that's what the current trends are appearing to be in so many aspects of things. You know, we're going to have millions of people potentially claiming, trying to claim disability and that they can't work. And for example, the whole generation of kids who, I talked about this in a recent podcast I did called A Health Cast Now, about because the host was particularly interested in my generation and so many kids who are video gamers, and they spend literally so many hours of their day just gaming late into the night. And when I was at UC Berkeley, I was visiting out there recently, and other universities in Colorado, because as running my business since, you know, September and traveling kind of on my own, I was feeling a bit lonely. So I thought, okay, maybe I should go to a university town at least, if not enrolling, so that I can at least be around people my age and try to find some people who are intellectual. And so that was interesting. I didn't really find many people who were intellectual, surprise, surprise. There were some, but not too many. But the thing that shocked me was in the dorm rooms at Berkeley where I was staying with a friend, there's like so many kids who are like just playing video games all the time. Like anytime they don't have class, they just get on the computer, it looks like. And it was my friend's roommate, and then the kids in the next room over, and then other rooms I saw. Like, it was just amazing. So I'm thinking, you know, I mean, it's very possible that these, and there's nothing wrong with playing video games inherently. You know, it's just, it seems like it's kind of like an addiction in a way, or something that people spend all of their time doing. Or it's, you know, are these people going to be, you know, creating wealth for themselves and benefiting positively to society? Or are people, these people going to be, want to be just like they have been, you know, in college, having things handed to them, like their financial aid and maybe money from their parents, or maybe they're taking on debt. But I mean, are these people going to be able to go out and work back their money, or are they going to want to claim handouts, which is what I think so many college students are going to be doing? How's that going to look? Is that going to
function? It's not even necessarily a handout, but it's still a form of dependence. And yeah. there's nothing against like working for a corporation or, you know, having a job, being part of a company. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you do it in a mindless and unconscious way, it really dictates a lot of what your life will be, right? Because a corporation is in many ways a corral. Like, a corporation has a culture. That culture affects the people who work there. There are lots of dependencies that people have, you know, as far as like real quality of life things, like yeah. retirement and healthcare, that are, you know, a part of their pay. A corporation can have a lot of control over an unconscious person's life. It can steer and herd people in different directions, and they're useful in that way. And there is a bit of a design to that as well. So most of the people who are in that situation are not, almost nobody is entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. that's a very, I shouldn't say almost, no, it's a small percentage of people. And that kind of expands out to lots of aspects of culture yeah. and politics, is yeah. that people go with, you know, the group that they become comfortable in.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask you also, because I'm curious, and I think it would be good for any listeners who are new to this show. I'm sure I'll share it with a lot of people who may never have heard the show before.
Sure.
for someone who wants to, you know, let's say someone decides I'm going to be focused on what I can do for myself. And I think that's the most noble thing we can do is to be focused on how we can make our lives as good as possible so that we can create a good lives for our families and that kind of thing. And we can build a strong society when we have a bunch of strong individuals rather than people who, like, you know, they claim to be good people because they go out and volunteer all the time. And there's nothing wrong with volunteering. That's awesome if someone has the interest in helping others. But I think the first thing is to make ourselves as good as we can. So for
I would say if you prioritize other things over your own well-being, you're going to lose those things anyway.
Yeah.
Probably. Especially people. If you prioritize other people's needs over yours, eventually, like, the circumstances they're not going to be in your life anymore.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be useful or resourceful for them or for yourself.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I was definitely introduced to the concept of that, rational self-interest by your show. And that has been super interesting to me, especially, you know, in relation to the advice that Dr. Cruz, the neurosurgeon, had given me when I went down and met him. To kind of focus on myself, become my best self. And then I learned from your show about the concept of rational self-interest. And then even, I forget whether it was a philosopher or maybe it was something Ayn Rand said or someone, but that the highest moral ideal is to be rationally self-interested and to make yourself better, because that's how we're going to build a strong society. And that anytime anyone claims to have other people, like to put others' best interest before their own best interest, that's communism. But what I mean to say is, like, that's I heard this on your show, just something, you know, along those lines, where that's like the foundation for a dysfunctional relationship with people. And the way that, for example, someone like Adolf Hitler is able to gain such a strong control when, you know, he claims that his interest is of everyone else, and that, you know what it really comes back to, and again, I think this is something I heard on the show, but maybe it was from something I read separately. But basically that, whose right is it to claim that they know what's best for someone else? Like, you know, if I decide, oh, top interest over myself is other people's best interests. But that's basically, I think, from what I've understood, is that's kind of like making the claim that, you know, I know what's better for other people. It's interesting that I had a friend who went with a program called Build On, which builds schools in poor countries in Central America and Nepal and places like this. My sister actually did this, but one of her friends did it in Haiti. And she said that the people just seemed so happy the way they were living, you know, that had so much good energy. And she was kind of asking herself, she told me, like, they're building a school.
Is this just imperialism?
Yeah. She says, why are we bringing this to them? Like, they're so happy. Why do we need to bring our life to them? I mean, you know, we see obviously the way we're schooled that bringing schools would be genius, but yeah, it's imperialism. So, that was a huge thing for me to learn about. And, that, you know, putting other people's self-interest over ours is just not a way to be good people ourselves. And not a way to structure a healthy and good society and relationships.
Oh, and think about how that, how that scales.
Yeah.
Right? If you are, I think Rand said, man is not a sacrificial animal. But when that scales and scales and scales and scales, then you do. I mean, the Hitler situation makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because you've got, you know, this idea of the collectivism.
Yeah, exactly.
The nation, the fatherland, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
That builds from that.
Yeah, so given that set of beliefs, you know, someone listens to this and they say, okay, I'm going to try that. I'm going to try to be my best self. As far as logic goes and as far as, unschooling and building one's own interests and potentially building one's own business or career, or at least finding something they align with, what do you think is the best thing that anyone can do to start with? Like, what's a general prescription that you would, suggest that people begin with if that's the path they want to go down, becoming their best self, learning about these things? You know, just like you asked me if anyone wanted to test this health philosophy, what are the first things they could do to try that?
Mm-hmm.
What would that be for being more intellectual and that kind of thing?
Well, I would adjust it a little bit and maybe ask you to – I would ask you to create a new question because here's what I mean.
Yeah.
Becoming your best self is definitely not like a destination.
Okay.
That's the whole ride.
Yeah.
Right. And it's something that, you know, I started working on when I was a few years older than you, and, you know, I'm still working on. In fact, a lot of the stuff that I started working on and doing when I was a few years older than you, that had to get scrapped and thrown away.
Yeah.
And I had to start over, like, several times, because that wasn't actually moving me in the right direction. So we're always going to be on that path towards the best self, towards a better self.
Not a destination.
So, like, where do we start is the question.
Yeah. The question is, where would you recommend someone starts? And I should add the context that's implied to me. If someone's been schooled their whole life, whether they're 50 or 60 years old and they hear this interview, or whether they're 18 or 17 or 20, somewhere around my age range, and they hear this interview and they think, well, I've been schooled my whole life. I don't have a whole lot of passion. You know, I don't really know what, because most people I know in college, they're like, I really don't know what I want to do. I really just don't, you know, and I have no clue what I'm going to major in and what kind of job I'm interested in. Where would you, from your experience, recommend people even begin to try to find what they really are passionate about, or to try to spark certain passions?
I would say, and this is learned from my mistakes, when I decided that I wanted to be better or do better or cut my own path, I would have really taken an honest and complete inventory of myself to really, really understand what are the issues that I have, why am I where I am, what do I really want, and I would continuously go through that process to live consciously, to make a commitment to living consciously through everything that I do. Because if you're not, like, I mean, if you think about critical thinking or you think about learning, if you're not good on the input, like, if you're not getting, like, it kind of goes back to, you know, the movie scene. If a bunch of things that you need are hidden in the shadows, what can you really do? Can you really see the complete, any, in the movie scene, it's okay to hide things in the shadows.
Yeah.
It's just a fucking movie.
Yeah.
Right. But in your life, those things that are hidden in the shadows, man, they can jump out at the most inconvenient of times. And that's happened to me a bunch of times in my life, you know? Or even to not be persistent about those things. Like, you say, okay, I've faced it. I've got, you know, this problem. But then that, you know, you get apathetic about it. Not apathetic.
Give up or?
Complacent.
Complacent.
Right, you get complacent about actually addressing that thing, just retreats back into the shadow, you know?
Yeah.
So it starts with a willingness to be honest with yourself about everything that you can think of. And having a kind of, I think Alice Miller, who wrote a lot on, like, childhood trauma and stuff, I think she called it the enlightened witness. So it could be a therapist, could be a best friend, could be a mentor. You communicate that stuff to them. But most importantly, you're open and honest with yourself about it, you know? And you make that a continuous process. You're open to what exists, right? That's the beginning of knowledge, right? That's, like, a really first important question to ask. What exists? Who am I? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? What do I want? Why do I want it? I made up lots of answers to those kinds of questions.
Yeah.
But the why answers that I would generate were never really complete enough.
Yeah.
You know, you can really hit the accelerator in the wrong direction, you know, if you're not honest with yourself about a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So knowing what you're doing and why, and that is actually Brandon's, I think this bigger idea that I'm talking about translates pretty well to Brandon's first pillar of self-esteem or self-respect, right? Mm-hmm. Belief in self, positive self-regard. I'm a guy who will face what's there, right? So there's, like, a stoic appeal to that as well, right? Like, I'm willing to see all of the ugly stuff there is to see. And so many of us have that ugly stuff.
Yeah.
And so many of us never face it. You know, it's kind of interesting, like, hours ago, many, many hours ago, I was saying that there's kind of a blessing in having to deal with a problem you have to face, right? Like, having a problem that's so severe, you have to face it. And even though it sucks when you're facing it, most people never get that opportunity. You know, most people never get the really crippling mental health problem.
Yeah.
Or the painful physical ailment, you know, at a young age like you did, that forces you into yourself, that forces you to look closely at yourself, or something like an addiction, right? Mm-hmm. Addiction especially is just like, it's not like this thing that I'm addicted to is the problem. The thing that you're addicted to is just a neon sign over your head that says shit isn't okay, right? Yeah. This is how it comes out. This is how I express that to myself and to everybody else, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So given an opportunity like that, that can be something that we can, if we take advantage of it, can lead to a lot of gratitude and can lead to a lot of growth. Most people never get that. Most people are fine to exist in a state where they're never really happy. Mm-hmm. They're never really fulfilled, but they're never really unhappy or unfulfilled enough to do anything about it.
You know? Wow. That's a fantastic answer.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough that that wasn't me, and you were lucky enough that that wasn't you.
Yeah.
But I look at myself and I say, well, I've been given an opportunity and I haven't done enough with it yet. Mm-hmm. So I need to really remember that first pillar, that first idea of honesty with self and living consciously. Positive things, even though it's tough, and even though there's things that are really hard to look at, you don't have to like what you see, Nathaniel Brandon says, but you got to see it.
Yeah.
All the growth comes from there, comes from that starting
point.
That's
amazing. I'm so glad to have heard that answer, because although, you know, it seems like I'm doing cool stuff for being 18, it's just... So there's so much growth for me still to do in so many ways, so many things about myself. And one thing that comes to my mind that I if I think about, you know, the average person who may or may not be listening to this, and I think about the first thing that in that self-evaluation that you talked about, I think one the first thing that most people would may think about or a huge thing would be their health, you know, because health is everything we have as a living organism. It's everything. It's how long we're going to live, how we feel on a daily basis, largely. Mm-hmm. So to me, and this is why I'm focused on the things I'm focused on, are how do I, you know, or to me, it's health. And then the other thing is, you know, our education. What do we know? How do we think? What do we believe? How do we construct the way we interact with the world? How do we organize our goals logically? How do we do the self-evaluation to find what we want, what we might be interested in, what our next step might be, whether it might be reading a bunch of books to try to find something that interests us. Maybe it's trying to find a job that is in that field or start a company like I have with what we love. But again, that's why I'm focused on these two things more than anything else, this health community and this research that I've been doing and all this kind of hacking or just self-experimentation I've been doing to try to just make myself feel better and better and better. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that's something like some of the things I mentioned earlier that a lot of people could maybe try to apply, learn about more and benefit from. And another thing would be like your show. That's why I watch your show and listen to it, because I think it's helping me to grow intellectually so much so that I honestly think, you know, yeah, that covers a lot. Health and, well, education is really knowledge and it's wealth. So health and wealth, and then that could be a good foundation for happiness. There's many other aspects for, and that's just for me. There's many other things I think that, you know, people need for happiness. But
yeah, absolutely.
But those are two things. Like if you have really good health and you know what you're doing, you're confident, you understand how life works, and that's kind of what I'm working on unveiling, because the research is still young. That's one thing, and then. Like all the stuff you talk about on your show, you know, developing firm, logical groundwork for your beliefs, whether you are, you know, Catholic and you believe in God, for example, and, you know, maybe, you know, some people that's very beneficial to them and they want to believe what they believe. And that there's, I don't think anything wrong with that, but just having some kind of solid, logical framework for life and how you're going to move through it consciously, like you said, I think everything. So. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. And that stuff that you're working on is kind of like can be a foundation for the other stuff. Or it's just a more comfortable place to pursue the bigger ideas, right?
Yeah.
To feel good physically, to feel clear mentally, to feel healthy and well-rested, you know, like it sucks to go after all this other stuff in a state of fatigue.
Yeah.
With a poor diet, with not to just drown yourself in the news. mm-hmm. you know, and in politics and even philosophy, because that's like really contentious and lots of argument, you know, lots of disagreements to be had there. If you're not taking your best self into that world, you know, and I would even say that after that, okay, so you kind of get this foundation. It doesn't have to be perfect, right? You don't have to be doing everything. Yeah. Like, you sleep 8 hours a night, you take cold showers, you avoid blue light, but you have to have a foundation. You're not eating Cheetos and beer and running up to a lectern to give a speech about why you have the best ideas, right? Because you don't have all the best ideas.
Yeah,
I think that's really important, and it sounds like that's the work that you're doing, and I'm really excited to see where it goes, because this is like the beginning of our relationship.
Absolutely,
you know. So that was an awesome. About 8 hours we spent together today.
Yeah,
I'm really glad I came here.
Yeah, I'm so glad you came too. This has been just such a, you know, just totally blowing my mind. So many cool things are happening. Like, I didn't think I might meet you for years or ever, but the fact that you happen to be in York, it's just totally awesome.
Thank you. And it was a very, very, the same experience for me. And for the people listening, we talk so much about light, and it's funny that now we're wrapping up the recording and we're sitting in a room on the third floor of your house, almost in complete darkness. We are just lit by like the faintest light, and I'm actually going to just take a picture. But thank you. This was awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much too. I really appreciate it.
I'll cut it there.
All right.
Hands over.